Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Football show coming up in a moment. Pat Nevin and Graham Hunter will join us. Richie is in studio now. How are you?
Not too bad. Do you want to share what we were talking about just before the mic?
Well, we were just discussing what we let our children watch online. I've got rid of YouTube off the iPad.
You're missing out on back-to-back
Thomas.
There's
only so many times I can watch a child open a Paw Patrol toy, which is what... Like, they've got like 4 million views for opening the latest Paw Patrol toy.
For those of you who don't have
kids, watch that for hours.
Yeah, this is like...
Every single new parent has this same defining moment where you're watching your children watch this on YouTube and you go, "Why? No, nobody watches this. Nobody watches this." And then you look at the amount of views this child has for being paid by these big toy companies to open the latest Paw Patrol toy. Latest piece. They might have like 6 million views on one video.
They're not on more than us though, Nathan, I tell you that much.
What? Yeah. So I was making the point that actually now they watch a lot of Netflix, and that Netflix, obviously, with all the data that they can take in, they can tell exactly when kids switch off each program after 20 seconds, after 10 minutes, whatever. There's loads of these specially made by Netflix. They're spending a lot of money on kids' TV.
They are.
And they're unbelievably addictive. They watch Trolls on repeat. There's no break, which is the other problem. There's no ad breaks.
Just keeps going.
Just keeps going on an endless loop of the same 10 Trolls episodes. And Trolls is the most mental. If you were maybe of a state of a Saturday morning where, still a bit of the remnants of Friday night there, you would find Trolls quite the trip.
Right. Let's avoid Trolls.
There's a lot of colours.
It's back to
a lot of craziness.
I'm just amazed that Thomas the Tank Engine is probably bigger than he was when we were kids. That stuff is huge. Huge.
Trolls is well and truly back. There was the movie with Justin Timberlake.
It's passable, let's be honest.
A lot of music in it.
Saw Coco there the other week.
Richie, don't.
It's a heartbreaker though. Not going to lie to you, without one spoil anything.
I don't want to say anything, but the lights went down. The lights went up and nobody moved in the cinema for about 10 minutes at the end.
Because a lot of rubbing of
upper cheek bones. My eyes a lot there. It's sad.
No, I'm not sad. I'm crying. You're talking about it. It's a film. It's a kid's film. We'll get back onto the sport because I fear we may have lost some people. Patrick Harrington's having a hell of a day on the opening round of the Houston Open. Potter.
Don't go winning it.
No, it's not without its possibility. Patrick Harrington has just picked up another birdie at the 16th with one to play. The 17th hole with one to play. He is 5 under par. He's 2 shots off the lead. It's Lucas Glover who's in the clubhouse following a 65 on 7 under par, but Patrick's right there on 5 under par. And Seamus Power's not having a bad day either. With 5 to play, he's 2 under par. Shane Lowry's round is just underway. If you're wondering why it's so late, there was rain earlier on in Humble, Texas that delayed the start of most of the rounds today. Paul Dunn won't go out until around about 10 to 10 Irish time. Only victory will do for the Irish foursome in Houston this weekend if they're to secure a place at next week's Masters. As we mentioned earlier, Ipswich manager Mick McCarthy says he's relieved to have his future resolved. The former Ireland boss will leave the Championship club when his contract expires at the end of the current campaign. They're currently 12th in the Championship. Some fans have voiced their unhappiness at some of the football they've played this season, but bloody good luck finding somebody else who's going to deal with his budget. Now, P-Mount striker Anya O'Gorman is back in the Republic of Ireland women's squad. She's back after a spell out with a knee injury for next month's World Cup qualifiers with Slovakia and the Netherlands. It is a boost for manager Colin Bell, who's had to factor without the injured trio of Harriet Scott, Megan Campbell and Stephanie Roach. Another inter-county camogie manager has left their job with the All-Ireland Championship around 10 weeks away. Galway senior manager Tony O'Donovan has left his post after just 4 months in charge. It's reported that O'Donovan was the subject of a unanimous no-confidence vote from the players following a disappointing league campaign. And finally, Leinster and Munster could both play their Champions Cup semi-finals in Bordeaux if they win this weekend. Munster will be playing in France no matter the opposition should they see off Toulon on Saturday, while Leinster will play at the Aviva if they beat Saracens on Sunday. It's a game you can hear live, of course, on Off the Ball. And if the Scarlets beat La Rochelle, that one has a 5:30 kickoff. Loads of early kickoffs tomorrow.
Nobody knows what you're talking about, Richie. I won't lie.
Do you want us to get back onto Paw Patrol?
I've listened to it 4 times now, and I still have no idea whether we're going to get a return trip to Bordeaux. The highlights of Euro 2016 was a Sunday in Bordeaux where
we did no work
because the ISDN line didn't work. Funnily enough, somebody thought it'd be a good idea to put a ISDN line in the, what was the name of the pub in Bordeaux? The Shamrock Bar or something? Probably. It sounds about right.
It's Irish
and
bar.
Shock horror, the morning after the Belgium match, the ISDN line doesn't work. So we couldn't do anything for our entire 5-hour show.
Didn't
so myself, Joe Malloy and Adrian Barry went off and saw the sights of Bordeaux. We went on the carousel.
And I did.
We spent a lot of time with some mime artists. Adrian Barry has a freakish fear of mime artists, and there are a lot of mime artists in France. I would love to go back to Bordeaux.
I'd love to go to Bordeaux.
Well, we'll see what can happen.
You know what I mean?
Time for the football show.
The football show on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to bring my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern-day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Come in and save me, Pat and Evan.
I was talking to Connie Kenningham a few weeks ago, actually. I wasn't talking to him about Peter Rabbit. By the way, don't diss Peter Rabbit. Seen it last night. It's actually quite funny. Much to my surprise. Taking the children to it and loved it. I was really surprised. No Paddington, I'll guarantee you that. It's not Paddington, but it's pretty good.
But James Corden didn't ruin your evening?
I think it was helped by the fact that I didn't know it was him doing the voice. And I've only found out since you've mentioned it. So it's kind of put a slight dampener on it. But apart from that, it's not bad. There's a couple of really good laughs in it.
When did the tide turn on James Corden? He was Mr. Popularity. And just in the last sort of 9 months or so, everybody sort of switched off.
I'm guessing, did he go over and do something in America?
He did. Well, he has his carpool karaoke, which again, I think people like, but he just stepped a little bit too far. He did that thing. Do you know what he did? And he did something with Sean Spicer at one of the award ceremonies and sort of reintegrated him back into American society. And they were all he was delighted with himself. Didn't realize that actually, this guy was standing right beside Donald Trump the whole time. Maybe it wasn't the wisest idea. Anyways, we've gone slightly off topic there, Pat. How's your international break been?
Oddly enough, I had a really busy time. Where have I been? I've been over to Paris. I was doing a conference over there. I'll not bore you with it, but it was a football conference, so it was okay. But I did try and watch as many of the games as I could. And to be honest, a lot of them didn't light my candle. Just all international friendlies aren't the same. A lot of people get turned off by friendly internationals because, people don't always go for it. Not everyone turns up. But on top of that, this is the one that's nearest to the World Cup, but it's right at the end of the season. Nobody wants to get injured. Absolutely nobody wants to get injured. So you get this kind of slight mutual non-aggression pact half of the time. And then if you're watching Argentina, Messi doesn't play, so it's a waste of time.
Yeah, because probably that standout performance of the past 10 days or so was Spain's victory against Argentina. But you have to give the health warning that even though they won 6-1, there was no Lionel Messi for Argentina. And also, as you say, it did have that sort of training ground feel. Spain were allowed to do whatever they want. Are they going to be allowed to do that at the World Cup? They're probably going to be kicked off the park, or certainly attempted will be made to kick them off the park. Now, you're probably not going to do it to Diego Costa. But even still, the manner, the depth that they seem to have in their squad, Spain, do you read something into that? Do you look at Spain and think they're back?
Well, to be honest, the times that you've written off Spain and Barcelona, we do so at our peril, and you always think this is their last hurrah. They've been having a last hurrah for about 6 years now, so you're not going to write them off. It's tough one to see. I mean, I don't take anything out of that. Remember, Argentina did beat they did beat Italy 2-0, didn't they? So how much can you take out of it? I try not to read too much into specifically these ones. And I'll give you an original reason why. Back a million years ago when I was playing for Scotland, last game before Euro 92, playing the USA in a friendly game. We won 1-0. Fortunately, I scored the goal. So I'm thinking, I'm going to Euro 92. Thing is, their fullback didn't read the memo. He's only crunched me and broke my fib or cracked my fib. This is like 4 weeks before the championships. It didn't stop me going. I still went, but it was damn painful. But the thing is, everybody knows, except for that one guy, Dominic Kinnear, everybody knows that, there's a limit you can go to. So you're not seeing a complete real game of football. So you always have to take it with some slight pinches of salt. But there was all good things. I mean, throughout, I had to watch the England games as well. And to be fair, the cockiness and the confidence of them really surprised me. I mean, they were playing against Holland, who are not the Holland of old, and Italy, who are not the Italy of old. But let's be honest about it, they were cocky as anything for large parts of those games. So, they surprised me slightly. But again, take not too much out of it. But I think you're right. Spain is the one that jumps out above absolutely everything else. And then you have a look at their bench. They had a good, strong team out. Then you look at their bench and you think, bloody hell, their bench could probably have done exactly the same thing.
That's interesting what you say about England. That cockiness, was that a whole starting 11 cockiness, or do they now have a couple of creative players who can really bring them to another level, the likes of Raheem Sterling, who's having such a sensational season with Manchester City, that they're now confident enough in themselves that they can sort of take hold of that England jersey and not be inhibited by it?
I think they have up front. Rashford, early on in the first game, he was doing exactly the same sort of thing. Real confidence, real belief about himself. You're absolutely right about Sterling. He's really matured into something special. The problem, if I've got, lots of positives, they've not given away any goals. For all the question marks about their defence, they ain't given away many goals. Mm. You have to look at their recent record. It's incredible. And it goes back to when Scotland scored a couple against them. I think they lost one goal since then, up until that last-minute penalty there the other day. But, you know, you just think, well, wait a minute. You know, they've obviously got something organised with the system, which is working defensively with them. And then you look up front and you've got the pace of Rashford, you've got the pace of Sterling. Kane obviously can score goals, and if he's not there, Vardy's got lots of pace as well. There is a problem for England, I think, and it's a massive problem. Every team has got a number 10 that can create something and break down a defence with a brilliant pass. And if you're Spanish, you've got about 7 of them. Everybody's got one of them. England ain't got one of them. And that's...
What about Dele Alli?
Well, I'm talking about a 10 who can get the ball down and create beautiful passes. Dele Alli gets onto things and he's very good at very different things, but he's not David Silva. You know, he's not Eriksen. He's not, you know, Fabregas. He's not Iniesta. He's not that type of player. You know, he's something slightly different from that. And I really do think you need the World Cup. And if you look back at all the World Cups previously, and even the Euros as well, the teams that win, and I think in, you know, back maybe 20 odd years, they've all got one, be it a Zidane, you know, all the way through. There's one that I remember didn't, and that was Greece. And that was just a joke. You should never have won it. But apart from that, everyone's got at least one of them. Because that's what you need for two things. You need it to break down the very best defences. When you get to last eight, you need somebody really special who can do that. Obviously, your Messi can do that, etc. But you also need it to break down those defences that won't come out. The ones that are just... It's all very well having Rashford's pace, or, you know, the pace you get from Vardy and the pace you get from various players up front. But if there's nobody running behind, that becomes difficult, and you need somebody with that cuteness. And if England are missing something, that's the one big thing they seem to be missing. I'm not calling them a bad team. They ain't. They're a very good team. But it looks to me a team that could get to the quarterfinals and we are pushed the semis. But after that, you needed something extra special.
It feels as though it's been a very good international break for Gareth Southgate, with the results, with the level of performance, with some of the players who've put their hands up, but also the way he's conducted himself in the media and not afraid to take on some of the more difficult questions regarding safety going to Russia, regarding the ongoing issues between Britain and Russia, regarding hooliganism, and not afraid to turn it back on their own supporters when it came to racism, that England really need to get their own house in order. The sort of thing that actually we've kind of become used to football managers just deflecting away from. They've got press officers who protect them. They don't tackle this sort of thing. Whereas actually, Gareth Southgate is well-rounded enough as an individual. He knows his importance, the importance of the England manager's job within English society, and feels that level of responsibility that you would want from someone in that position.
Yeah, I mean, a cynic would say, look, he knows he's going to have to deal with them anyway, because he's going to get constant media between now and going to Russia, and when he's in Russia as well. So you might as well hit it on the head, nail it right now, and nail your colours to the mast. I mean, the most difficult one actually was probably for the fans going to Russia and his answer to that. You know, and he said, no, go, it should be fine. Someone might say, well, that the FA are going to say that anyway. But no, I agree with you. I think he just about stepped on exactly the right line the whole way through it. There'll be more tough ones coming, but in the end, they're all secondary. You know, he's getting, you know, admired for it now, but then he's grown into the job. But they're all secondary. Had he lost badly in any of those two games, he'd have hammered it anyway. And that's just the way it is. I mean, it's intriguing, you know, talking to people about it. I mean, I'm going to be in Russia for a whole month. I mean, I'm going to be there all the way up to the semi-finals. And I have to say it, I'm one of these people who's really looking forward to the strangeness of it. I kind of love that. And if you look back on it, each of the World Cups that I've been to, oh, watch out for South Africa. It's really dangerous there. You get mugged in Johannesburg. Oh, watch out for Brazil. There's people, you know, mugging you there all the time, and all sorts of dangers. And there was all sorts of chat before then about riots. Every World Cup, they've got two things usually going for them. One of them, it's going to be dangerous. Second one, the stadiums won't be ready. And usually it doesn't work out that bad.
One of the big issues facing Gareth Southgate, and maybe Maurizio Pochettino to a certain extent as well, is the form of Dele Alli. It seems hard to believe that we would be talking less than 3 months out from a World Cup and he's not assured of his place in the England side, considering how good he was last season. 18 league goals, unquestionably the young player of the year. This year it hasn't quite happened from it, and Southgate raised the possibility that maybe he won't be part of his starting 11. Maybe that's an easier thing for an international manager to do. How does Maurizio Pochettino go about balancing having somebody he reckons is the best player under the age of 21 in world football? How do you guide him through these difficult few months and see him out the other side?
Well, everybody goes through tough times. I mean, Gareth will tell you he went through the toughest of times after that infamous penalty miss in the World Cup. So he's had to deal with it. He's had to come through the other side of much tougher times than Dele Alli's had to do with, you know, with just a little dip in form. I don't think Pochettino will be particularly worried about it. I think he looks at that team and he's got Son, you know, he's got Eriksen, and he's got Kane when he's fit again. And there's probably enough there. He wouldn't want two of those to be either out or off form. So if they're playing against Chelsea at the weekend, they might be worried about Dele Alli not available, and if Harry Kane doesn't make it, that would be a big concern for them there. But I don't think he'll worry about that. I think, again, Pochettino's a good manager and he'll probably get the best out of him. Bigger problem is England, really, because there's no doubt that Dele Alli fits perfectly into the Spurs system. But will he fit into the system now that has been asked, you know, of Gareth Southgate? Very different system, different types of players as well. And they're not kind of leading it to somebody who can link with him. And he has great link-up play with Harry Kane. He's fantastic link-up play with Eriksen as well. Well, they haven't got an Eriksen for him to link up with. So, you know, that's going to be a tough one to fit him in there. But, you know, he's not a bad guy to bring on as a sub because he's got plenty of quality. And, you know, he might just be having a dip now. It would be good for him to be coming on to form just when he's getting into the World Cup, not dipping just then.
Chelsea against Spurs is the big game of the weekend in the Premier League. There's 5 points between them at the moment. Spurs on 61, Chelsea on 56. If Tottenham were to go to Stamford Bridge and win on Sunday, you'd have to say that's that in terms of the race for the top four. But if Chelsea can win it, suddenly the gap is back to 2 points. There's a lot of questions about Spurs. Interesting, with again, maybe on Dele Alli and Harry Kane and where Spurs are and just how well they've done under Maurizio Pochettino. In his book with Guillaume Balague, he was talking about how you manage young players like that. And Dele Alli, when he arrived from MK Dons, and even when he was still playing with MK Dons, he used to go to Tottenham twice a week and he would train with them. And how Pochettino felt he could really drill into him in those opening stages of his time at Tottenham and really get at him and drive him and drive him. But then last season he scores 18 goals and you have to treat him differently. He's an absolute superstar. You need to treat him sort of with kid gloves. And we kind of forget about that when we talk about the challenge for Pochettino, even in terms of wage bills and things like that. These players are being offered massive money elsewhere. They will have the opportunities to go. That he has to sort of soothe their ego and probably give them a little bit more rope than you would with other players and other managers have to do, just to sort of constantly keep them happy. Would that be fair to say?
I can understand the thinking of it, but I wouldn't be wanting to do that with Dele Alli, just with the type of personality he seems to have some of the time. I mean, on the pitch, you know, he can look a little bit huffy. He can look, you know, annoyed at everybody in the world around him sometimes. He's got arrogance is always said as a negative thing. Arrogance isn't always a negative thing when you're playing football, but he's got that arrogance about him. So don't overpush that. Don't push that the right way. And remember, he is just a kid as well. His head will be in different places at different times. I mean, trying to remember how, I mean, I can remember what I was like at 21. I thought I was fairly mature for a footballer, but I was still a bit daft some of the time. And, you know, Dele Alli will be the same. Any young player is the same. I suppose the best thing you can possibly say is just have a look at that boy Kane there. Just have a look at his attitude, the way he reacts to things. And remember, Harry Kane's gone through spells where he's, you know, not scored goals. Usually after an injury, he goes in a little bit of period of time where he doesn't score goals. So, you know, you've got good people around you. And Pochettino, I mean, I wouldn't worry for them at all. You're right about bringing it back to that Chelsea game, though. I think that's, for Chelsea, it's the biggest game of the season for them. I really do think it's that important. If Chelsea lose that one and Spurs win, Chelsea, I can't see them catching Spurs. However, if Chelsea win it and that 2 points behind, Chelsea have got a really good run in after that. I mean, a real load of winnable games.
Yeah, they've West Ham, Southampton, Burnley, Swansea as their next four Premier League games.
Exactly, and you look at, you know, they've got the last game, is it second last game's Liverpool, I think, which is obviously their toughest game. they're all winnable games if they play their best. But if you look at what Spurs have got, if they lose against Chelsea, they're Stoke away, which they should manage, but then they've got Man City at home. So suddenly that 2 points doesn't seem a hell of a lot at all. So, you know, and again, I don't know if I hold too much store by this, but we have watched Spurs blow up a couple of times, very noticeably down at Chelsea in 2016, when they had the title in their sights, and it just seemed to implode in that last 10 minutes after Eden Hazard, I think it was, scored the equalising goal. They always amazed me at that, because they really lost it, and they went about kicking people. And I'm not just saying that somebody who favours Chelsea. You know, the FA hammered them for it, for what happened that day. But what amazed me more than anything else, it was 2-2. There was 6 minutes plus injury time to go, and they lost it. You're thinking, you only need a goal. I couldn't believe they'd done that. So this is the time we find out about Spurs. Have you gone past that? Can you take that sort of stress and that sort of pressure? And if they lose to Chelsea, they're under that pressure again.
Lots of reports that Paris Saint-Germain are interested in bringing Antonio Conte to the club this summer. Now, there'll probably be lots of reports linking Paris Saint-Germain with pretty much every leading manager in Europe over the next couple of months. But it has felt for several months now that this Conte-Chelsea relationship is going to come to an end one way during the summer, and they'll probably both be glad to be rid of each other with the way things have gone. Are Chelsea as a club in a position where they're already starting to think of who's next?
I would suspect that Chelsea have probably never had a manager since the start of the Abramovich era when they've not been considering the next one. They just do that as part of the deal. If actually you're well organised from one position, from a business position, you should be looking at the next man all the time, because you just don't know when it's going to change, when someone's going to leave, whatever's going to go wrong. You better have your options and your thoughts in the pipeline. And I'm sure they've got that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they've got thoughts in their line on two managers down the line, just in their minds just now. And lots of clubs do that. That's not just Chelsea. That's lots of clubs. And if he does leave, I mean, Chelsea fans will be gutted. I mean, I'll be disappointed. But, you know, add that to the list of managers I've been disappointed to see leave Chelsea. You know, they'll probably just get another great manager. And that's what Chelsea do. Mm-hmm. You know, in a way, after a while, after a good long time of year after year after year, after trophy after trophy after trophy, after manager after manager after manager, you think, actually, that's just the method, you know, and it seems to work for them. And would you be surprised if, you know, Conte did leave, and he'll get a great job because he deserves it, because he's a very good coach, but he goes in and the next guy comes in and he does a good job as well, because they can go and pick not the cream, but among the cream of the managers. Problem is now, is what's up the road north. You've got Pep there, you've got Jose there, you've got Jurgen Klopp up there as well. I tell you, that's a really, really tough trio to get by. So you want to get a good manager in, but if you're going to stick with M3, well, he's going to have to be brilliant.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens in Chelsea during the summer, regardless of who the manager is, in terms of just how much financial support they give that manager, because they
The Conte thing going to Paris Saint-Germain, I cannot see that happening at all. That's the one I don't see happening. The reason being, I was at the PSG game against Real Madrid there, and I look at that team. That is a mega restructuring that needs done there. And they've already spent massive amounts of money, and they are a country mile away from where they want to be, where they demand to be as a club. So whoever takes that next one on, they better get a hell of a lot of money. And remember, it's actually quite difficult to get that many players to go to Paris now. Yeah, there's a load of money, but the league's not going to be fantastic. And by the way, the big push to go and win the Champions League that started when the new money came in ain't happened yet. So players will be thinking, well, if it's a choice between, you know, Man City or Barca or Real Madrid, I think PSG are still far down the line.
Manchester City play Everton. It's the late game on Saturday evening. Win that, and then they could claim the title at the Etihad against Manchester United the following week. Are you at a stage, Pat, already where you're sort of ready to define just how great this Manchester City is in terms of the Premier League, or does it still depend on what happens over the next couple of months in the Champions League?
I'm happy to define what they're doing as a beautiful game. I mean, I don't know if I've seen a better-looking team to watch and I enjoy it, because it suits the kind of football I want to watch, and that's a very selfish thing. But a lot of people do think it's a gorgeous way to play football. There have been some great teams over the years, and we know Liverpool. I played against some fabulous Liverpool sides. Manchester United had that great side. And I could go on. Even the early Arsenal side were brilliant. You know, there's lots of sides that you can actually mention in there. But the pleasure of watching, you know, that standard of player playing to that level and the manager's attitude towards it, it's just a joy. And I don't know if I've enjoyed watching a team any more than this team in my time. Well, I wouldn't have enjoyed Liverpool because they were generally beating us, so I wouldn't enjoy that. You know what I mean? You know, generally, I would go and watch Man City every day of the week if I had an opportunity. Having said that, I was supposed to go this weekend to as a guest of Everton, and I had to turn it down. I'm going to Stoke versus... No, I'm not. I'm going to West Ham versus Southampton instead.
Wow.
That's work, man. It's work.
That's life. That is life. I mean, listen, there'll be other days.
I shouldn't complain, actually, because I've got West Ham Saturday. I'm doing the Chelsea-Spurs game on Sunday, and then I'm off to Juve against Real Madrid on Tuesday. So, as you said, it's a tough life, but you've got to do it.
These things even themselves out.
I'm just because you were all talking about going to Bordeaux beforehand. I thought I'd need to rub that in a bit.
Yeah, we're hoping that we may eventually get a trip to Bordeaux before the end of the season. When Pep Guardiola then is sitting down during the summer, where are City going to improve? Where are the areas where actually they could possibly get even better?
Yeah, to be honest, I wrote a piece about that last week because that's the most interesting thing there. Because obviously we know that the chances have got in Europe, we know we're going to win the league, all that sort of stuff. But Pep doesn't sit in his laurels. There's no way he's going to do that. He'll be looking at the next thing thinking, right, not where there's a weakness, but where I can strengthen, right? And you look at it, and there are a number of... I think the left fullback position will be fine because Mondi will come back, and that'll be fine. The right back's okay. The centre-back area is beginning to look as if it's kind of sorted out as well. And you're looking around, you think, well, where are you going to strengthen? And oddly enough, see, it's a strange thing to say, but it could be Aguero. Somebody else up beside Aguero who gives something different there, something special there, something that... you know, fits in with Pep, and is a little bit younger than Aguero as well.
Is that Jesus?
I don't know if it is. I think, you know, it may have a try for another year, but I don't know if it is. I don't know who it will be, but that's the thing I'm most intrigued to look forward to, because Pep will do something. You know, he will adapt and change something. He'll strengthen the squad. I mean, a lot of the times this season, there's been a couple of areas, even at left back, he's had to go and put players that have not been left fullbacks in there. He's mucked about in the centre, you know, the centre back area, and it hasn't always looked as if he's got that right. But to be fair, don't try and second guess Pep Guardiola. He's a bit cleverer than the rest of us, and he's usually got his finger on the button and the pulse of what's happening. So if a South American we hardly know much about comes in, don't be surprised at that.
Well, I was wondering about one of the other positions, which would be David Silva's, because he's 32 now. Listen, he's still at the peak of his powers. In fact, he's arguably been better than ever this season. But at that age, like, are there other players around Europe with a similar skill set to David Silva that aren't playing at, say, Barcelona or Real Madrid that could be open to Manchester City?
Yeah, this is a massive one when they get rid of him. Again, I'm biased. He's been my favourite player in the history of the Premier League. He's certainly been my
really,
favourite
really, that
player.
Good?
Yeah, I'm not saying he's the best player. He's just my favourite player. I always say this. The day that I first seen him play his first game for Manchester City, I just stopped and went, that's how I tried to play football. Not how I did. That's what I was trying to do the whole time. He's exactly the style of football that I love trying to play, and now and again touched it, but he does it all the time. So I think he's an incredibly hard one to replace, you know, and you look at Iniesta, you know, exactly the same sort of situation there over at Barcelona. And these guys are not easy to find, and you used to get them through the Barcelona system. Ain't there anymore. Look at the Barcelona system. I think the right back, isn't it? He's the only one recently that's come through the system. So that big group that came through all together, or within a 4, 5, 6 year period each other, it's kind of, I'm not saying it's completely dried up. So I think you're back looking at South America then again and looking for that sort of player. But they're really rare to that standard. I think he looked at Bernardo Silva to be that player, and he may well be in time, but he's not quite at that standard yet. And that's something that they will certainly be looking at. They might not get another Silva. That's the mistake we always make. You have to get an actual replacement for the same... No, you might get something completely different.
Yeah, and you'd imagine Pep Guardiola far more aware of that than anybody else. Pat, great stuff as always. We shall talk to you next week.
Look forward to it. See you then.
Pat Nevin there, special guest on a Thursday night. I'm sure he'll be back on Monday talking to Joe, reviewing all the weekend's Premier League. And as always, Saturday afternoon we'll have reporters at all the games, so you will not miss a goal. Analysis from Gary Breen, from Kevin Kilbane, and from Clinton Morrison as well. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to chat to Graeme Hunter.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. We will check in with Graeme Hunter shortly, but hey, it's the football show, but there's always time for a golf update.
God, you're such a nerd.
McCormick just burst into
drags me in.
Oh, did I mention, by the
drags
way,
me in.
Golf Weekly is online right now.
Did you mention what happened last week, by the way, on our staff night out? Straight away we were in the door and there was a
this was a fabulous moment that I didn't want to, I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't want to share it with the
I thought you spent the last 3 days going on about it.
We had an off the ball night out last Thursday night, and Johnny Fox is up the Dublin mountains. A wonderful time was had by all. JP made sure the bus brought us back home at 11:30, even though we didn't want to go, because that's the sort of killjoy he is.
Hates crack.
So I was myself, Joe and Richie were chatting on the bus, and Richie, as is well publicised, hates golf. He hates golf nerddom, which is sort of what we do on Golf Weekly. And we were saying how it's going really well, like it's gaining in popularity all the time. We're really happy. We had a huge entry to our golf day in Luttrellstown next week. And Richie was like, nobody listens to it. What are you talking about? Walk into Johnny Fox's. The timing couldn't have been better. The manager walks up.
It wasn't the manager. It was some bloke. He works there.
Assistant manager.
It wasn't the assistant manager. He was just some guy. He was a server.
With most Golf Weekly listeners, he's got a very high-ranking job in his chosen profession.
No offence.
Walks up to myself and Joe. Friend of the pod, Richie's face was a sight to behold. Like, that made my night.
If it was like, I don't know if many people out there have seen Fight Club, and without wanting to spoil anything on here, like the film is 18 years old, so get over yourself. But when somebody walks up to Ed Norton's character and goes, oh, thank you, Mr. Durden, and winks at him, that's exactly what it was. It's this weird cultish kind of thing that was going on there.
It's wonderful.
Freaks.
I'm glad you said cultish, because from time to time you have said other things about Golf Week.
Sounds very similar.
Quickly, give us the golf.
A 67 for Jack Harrington. He's given himself a nice platform for the week in the Houston Open. 5 under par is how Harrington signs off today, and he's 2 off the lead. Kevin Tway and Lucas Glover both leading the way on 7 under par, and Seamus Power is having a decent day as well. He's 2 under. Shane Lowry's birdied his first, 1 under par, and Paul Dunne will go out in the next few minutes. So a decent platform for those 4 Irish players who need to win if they're going to play at the Masters next week.
Cheers, Richie. That was good time filling. Good evening, Graeme Hunter.
Nathan, that's the weirdest conversation I've ever had to come in off the back of in my entire history of talking to Off the Ball. Obviously, as well, I mean, get over yourselves. The first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about it and compare it to golf.
Oof, I mean, well, Richie, that was Richie. What was Richie at?
Yeah, okay, listen, you've got to take corporate responsibility for him, though.
Well, I'm sure you have lots of friends of the pod, friends of your pod. Sort of secret society, people who give you a nod in the wink and go, I listened to that last week.
If I did, but I wouldn't be telling you, because I'm not a secret anymore. Guys, shape up altogether. Let's go to football.
I dare say you'll have had a few more of them giving you that wink and a nod this week. Jurgen Klopp, eh?
Whew. Yeah, listen.
You're taking it to a whole new level.
No, he is. No, I'm not. He might be, yeah. Let's start for the honest truth. First of all, whether I've done well in the past or not, some of our guests have been at that level, you know. I won't hear a word against the likes of, you know, Michael Carrick or Eddie Howe or Souness or Harry Redknapp and so on. But there's a wonderful, and I mean genuinely wonderful, press officer at Liverpool Football Club who does the job the way that every fan, every journalist who's worth their salt, who cares about the game, who cares about their own profession, would adore. I mean, literally goes out and sculpts the kind of media coverage, media access that he thinks his club deserves and that the journalists deserve. If you go back to the way in which Brewster was abused racially and the press officer there, Matt, sought out the right journalist, the right paper, whereby that interview where a difficult subject, which quite often over my working life, over yours too, Nathan, the club would have hidden it away or protected the player. Hidden the player away is a better way to say it. And instead, Matt at Liverpool decided that the way to tease the issue out, to open the debate, to try and get people to rail against what had been happening to young Brewster, was to find the right way to tell the story. Isn't that what Off the Ball stands for? Isn't it what, you know, the big interview stands for? And in that case, it's what a lot of the Guardian sports print and websites stand for. So the kudos, apart from going to Jurgen Klopp for sparing 45 minutes of his time, definitely goes to Matt at Liverpool. And I know, and probably you and your colleagues know, that there are other media officers, press officers like him in the Premier League, but they're not in the majority. And the sooner that clubs watch the coverage that Liverpool are getting and change their attitude, so that the coverage they get, the understanding they get, the interaction they get with media and fans isn't based on the sort of barometer of whether they're playing well or playing sexy football or not. It's about proper grown-up relationships. So the credit lies in the communications office at Melwood and Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, it's great to hear that there's press officers out there who are proactive and, you say, aren't just waiting for something to go wrong before they feel the need to get journalists involved. So, Jurgen Klopp, is it out? Is the interview
released? It's out on Monday. It's out first thing on Monday. And look, what we wanted to do was to allow Jurgen to be Jurgen Klopp. I went there not simply because he's the Liverpool manager and they're about to play Manchester City, but because he's the type of man who genuinely makes me happy about the state of modern football, happy about the way in which he comports himself, like simply the way that he devours his football life, the way that he laughs, the way that he gesticulates, the way that he admits to being emotional about football, the way he commits, the way that he doesn't hide anything. You know, you see the full sort of emotion and that football costs him and how he tries to interact with people. Played out, you know, on a weekly basis, either in press conferences or in interviews or in matches. And I like his proposition, you know, again in life, not just in football. When somebody says, I want going to watch football at my club, wherever I'm coaching, to be worthwhile. I want it to be exciting. I want the spirit of football to be represented. And I think it is. I was at Dortmund, it was at Mainz, it is at Liverpool, it will be at his next club, wherever that is, whenever that is. Therefore, I wanted to speak to him and I wanted to let Jurgen Klopp be Jurgen Klopp on tape. Clearly, we talk a little bit about the Champions League and clearly we talk about individual footballers. But really, it's an opportunity for him to talk about things. And we do talk about things that you wouldn't normally hear him talking about, including James Bond's testicles.
Right. Well, on that note, we look forward to that, Graeme, next week. So that'll be ahead of the Champions League game between Liverpool and Manchester City and sort of going off and trying to piece all this together. We've just been talking with Pat Nevin about Manchester City and he was saying and expressing his love for David Silva, who he feels is the player he's most enjoyed watching ever in the Premier League, the player he most would have wanted to be like as a footballer. And we were wondering, at his age, is Pep Guardiola going to be starting to look elsewhere, looking for a replacement? And like, is that type of player simply out there? Is Spanish football, are they still creating that type of player? The Silvas, the Iniestas, maybe they are just the level they're simply not replaceable. But the Iscos, Asensios seem like a slightly more direct, a slightly different type of player. But are those technically cultured footballers still coming through?
I don't think there's any question. You've taken some of my answer away by pinpointing Isco, who I think Manchester City are likely to try and sign in the summer. Asensio is not identical, but he's cut from the same cloth in terms of what he can do to an opponent, what he can do with the ball. And aside from tactical or strategic ideas, the thrill he gives people when you watch him, I think you can very quickly and easily go to Manchester City and Brahim Diaz. He's young enough, Nathan, that to say categorically he'll be a world-class footballer is something that I'd rather do if I was watching him week in, week out. But the ability is there. There's absolutely no question about that. He's a magical footballer, cut again from the same cloth. And then you look at Soler at Valencia. If you look at, I would say, Alenia at Football Club Barcelona, you could immediately go to Villarreal and pick out a couple of similar footballers. And yes, they exist. And what's more, I think there are natural conditions whereby the Spanish mainland is still producing plenty of athletes who are slightly different physically from, say, Northern Europe, Dutch, Germans, whether you want to call Brits. And therefore, physically, there will still be generations of footballers who need to practice on all through their life in football sala, control of the ball, trickery. There's an ideology here, whether you're talking about the way kids want to play in the street corner or the way that they're trained to play, that to take the ball, pass the ball, bedazzle your opponent, trick your opponent. Even if you're applying your skills to a team ethic, make the crowd stand on their feet. There's still several elements in the belief system, in the coaching system, right across amateur and professional football in Spain. That means it will surprise me hugely if there aren't players coming through on a consistent basis long after I'm finished broadcasting and writing.
On Isco, why is it he seems to be in a position where he's playing his best football in a Spanish jersey rather than a Real Madrid jersey?
I don't think he is, Nathan. I think that... Okay. No, listen, I'm not taking issue with your words. You are reflecting something that is the preoccupation of the not just the Spanish media, but the Madrid press. But I think that it's like a concertina, and this time at the moment it's squeezed tightly together. In that the Madrid media is having, you know, canaries because Isco in recent weeks has been played less. What they don't have a memory for, and which really makes me angry because it betrays the proper values of our profession, that in the beginning of the season when Modric and Kroos were a little bit under par or were injured, when Casemiro was wildly out of form, after the first 5 weeks of the season when Asensio wasn't scoring goals and was being used dramatically less by Zidane, Isco carried the team. Isco had just as big a load last season as Kroos did or Casemiro did or Modric did, yet he was the one right up until February, who was playing extraordinarily and literally carrying the emotions of the fans and doing a great deal to stop the gaps where Madrid, pardon me, weren't keeping the ball well, weren't posing enough threat to teams. So if Isco in the last 4 or 5 weeks has played a little bit less, if other people have looked fresher, if Zidane has held him back, then there is no panic. There is no big deal. Over the last couple of seasons, there's always been a debate about should you start more, whereas I think 2 seasons ago, nobody played more matches for Real Madrid than Isco. And in this season, at the end, if he carries on now, winning some time back, scoring and making goals, as he showed against Argentina, not only with his hat-trick, but with his general chutzpah, his willingness to taunt the Argentinians, draw them into positions, create space for other players. If he's playing like that between now and the end of the season, he'll get the same amount of games. And the objective for him is to be, having been part of a European championship-winning side for his country at a junior level, the objective for him is to be one of the leaders when Spain go to Russia. As of June the 9th, they'll arrive there for the June 15 kickoff against Portugal. And right now, Nathan, speaking selfishly, somebody will be covering Spain at that tournament. If he's had a little bit of a rest for 4 or 5 weeks right now, I'm not crying into my cocoa.
Very briefly, and we're very jealous because it's probably the one team everyone wants to be following this summer. Asensio, Isco, Silva, Iniesta, the four of them in the same Spanish team at the same time. Is that likely to happen?
Yeah, absolutely possible. There's no question that it's, I mean, although Morata will be back and join the squad, Costa scored a goal the other day, Rodrigo is having a season that you know, that makes him a contender. The truth of it is, Lopetegui is quite happy to play without a centre-forward, with, say, Silva drifting into that role, whether you want to call it false nine or not. Busquets is playing at the absolute best of his career for Spain right now, and Iniesta, so long as he stays fit, adds gravitas and ball control and experience. So, when you name all those players, it's feasible, but Lopetegui has also shown, Nathan, that number one, he has strategic variance, and number two, he is not afraid to use anything of his increasingly vast tactical book to try and make Spain winners.
All right, Graham, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. That is almost us done for tonight. Everything from tonight's show will be up on offtheball.com, the John Giles podcast, the football show as well with Graham Hunter and Pat Nevin. Andy Lee looking ahead to all the weekend's boxing and also that discussion about the new Director General of the GAA, Tom Ryan, with Michael Moynihan and Colm Keyes up now on offtheball.com. Earlier tonight, we asked you to name Saracens head coach. It is, of course, Mark McCall. Congratulations to Alan Lenehan. We're going to see you at the Aviva Stadium on on Sunday. You've won that VIP experience of a pair of premium match tickets to watch Leinster take on the reigning champion Saracens in the quarterfinal. Of the Champions Cup this Easter Sunday. You get access to Leinster's Blue Room for the pre-match analysis with the Off the Ball team. We're going to be joined by Shane Jennings, by Bernard Jackman and Andy Dunn for that pre-match panel. You'll also get a chance to meet two Leinster players followed by an exclusive Q&A. So it's going to be a really good pre-match build-up. For more on Leia Healthcare and their hashtag It's Good to Live campaign, visit leiahealthcare.ie. OTB AM is back tomorrow morning, bright and early, 7:45. Facebook, YouTube, Periscope, all our social channels. Owen and Dave in the hot seat. Alan Quinlan is going to be on. Jockey Robbie Power as well, ahead of Grand National weekend at Ferry House. Tomorrow night, we're back, 7 o'clock. The Crappy Quiz, Connacht's Tiernan O'Halloran. And since it's Good Friday, we'll have a selection of our best bits from the last few weeks, which generally seems to mean that JP's taken a long weekend and really couldn't be bothered putting the effort in, despite the fact it's been a really busy weekend. There's an awful lot of live sport we could cover tomorrow, JP, if you just hang around work for more than 3 hours on a bank holiday. He's got the... You're a public sector guy at heart, aren't you? You're not an RTE now. Were you ever an RTE? I'm not quite sure. Anyway, Tom Dunn is up next. That is us done for tonight. Good night.
Give him a ball and he had a grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and he had a spice. He'll give you a move with guilt.